We need you. We need to take that down. We do. To be a soloist here, you not only have to be a great singer, you have to be a, I don't know, escape artist, I guess. So, at any rate, today we are continuing with our 2020 theme as we are going to navigate, the seven C's of being a compassionate, courageous, contemplative, collaborative, connected, candid community. I'll show you the slide later, okay? This means that we, well, I can do it here. Okay, more than one way to do it. Okay, what this means is that we come together in oneness to lovingly support one another in experiencing the presence of the divine, claiming our spiritual identity, and expressing in the outer world all that we can imagine God to be. Thank you, dear. And the quality of our connection and communication, as we said last week, really is directly related to how we perceive and communicate with ourselves. So to that end, we began the year exploring the book. Battery must be dead. Okay. We began the year exploring the book, The Four Agreements, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom by Don Miguel Ruiz, and his later book, The Fifth Agreement, A Practical Guide to Self-Mastery, written with his son, Don Jose Ruiz. Did you put the thing in here? The little piece in here? The little piece goes in here. Okay. Sorry. Thank you, dear. Would you like to give this talk? He might do a better job, actually. All right, here we go. Okay, it's missing. Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, based on the wisdom of ancient Toltecs of southern Mexico, the agreements can be provocative, revolutionary, and life-changing. They actually provide us with a framework to release harmful old agreements imposed on us through social conditioning and the expectations of others. Too often, the problem is those old agreements that were instilled in us as children absolutely lead to toxic, fear-based beliefs such as, I am not good enough. I am not good enough. So to avoid being unacceptable, unloved, and rejected, we learned to pretend to be what others wanted us to be. The good news is we have the power to change those agreements. Don Ruiz's personal story is really interesting. He was the youngest of 13 children, and he became a successful surgeon in Mexico. He went into practice with his brothers. But a near-fatal car accident changed the direction of his life, leading him to realize that there must be more to life than personal success and material wealth. He returned to his mother to acquire more understanding of the long traditions of the Toltecs, and finally he moved to the United States to become an apprentice shaman. His books, I think, contain a unique blend of Toltec wisdom, spirituality, and scientific perspective. So last week, if you were with us, we looked at the first agreement, the one Ruiz says is the most important of all. Be impeccable with your word. Be impeccable with your word. The word is not just a verbal or written symbol, as we think about it being, but it also gives us the power to create. However, Ruiz says this amazing power can be a two-edged sword. Used impeccably, it can create the most beautiful story, a personal heaven on earth. Or misused, it can destroy everything around you and create a personal living hell, his words. And who remembers what impeccable means? Raise your hand if you remember. Shout it out. Anybody remember? Well, I did a fine job last week, didn't I? Okay. Impeccable actually means, according to the dictionary, without sin, flawless. Ruiz defines sin as anything you do which goes against yourself. That's a different definition of sin, is it not? Anything you do which goes against yourself. So being impeccable with the word means we speak with integrity, say only what we mean, avoid using the word to speak against ourselves or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. Now that means we use the power of our word to align with what is spiritually true. So I know we had a smaller crowd last week because of the weather, but how many of you practice being impeccable with your word? Who practiced? Oh good, a lot of people. Okay, if you don't mind sharing, let's do a 1 to 5 spectrum. 1 being easy peasy and 5 being pretty difficult. How would you rate your progress in being impeccable with your word? I'm going to rate mine in front of everybody. How would everybody rate? Come on, let me see. Come on, share. Okay, I see a lot of 2s and 3s. I don't think I see some 4s. That's good. I don't think I see any 5s. The thing is, as powerful as this agreement is, it can be difficult to practice because of our conditioning. It takes intention and perseverance to continually monitor that self-talk and our spoken word to make sure that our word is aligned in truth. Now, Ruiz notes that the next 3 agreements are actually born in the first one. And I'd like to add that I think they're all born from remembering who and what we really are, namely individualized expressions of God. Created in the image and likeness of the divine, we are, as Betty said today in her prayer, fully endowed with all the powers of the Christ. And when we remember our true essence, who we really are, we can be impeccable with the word, and we can practice agreement number 2, which is don't take anything personally. It's appropriate today that we remember a man who truly demonstrated this agreement. We go back to April 1963, when a group of 8 moderate white clergymen published a statement in the Birmingham News condemning Martin Luther King's presence in the city and his peaceful demonstrations that he had been leading. The clergy group judged his actions unwise and untimely and said that he was an extremist and an outsider coming into Birmingham. Now, as he sat in that Birmingham jail, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. certainly could have taken these words personally, could he not? It would be pretty easy to take them personally. A man with a lesser consciousness would have done just that and responded in anger and resentment. But that's not what Dr. King was all about. He wrote a lengthy response, begun in the margins of the paper that somebody had smuggled into him, and then he smuggled his answer out through his attorney. Known as the letter from the Birmingham jail, it began. My dear fellow clergymen, while confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling my present activities unwise and untimely. Seldom do I pause to answer criticism of my work and ideas. If I sought to answer all the criticisms that cross my desk, my secretaries would have little time for anything else, and I would have no time for constructive work. But since I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill and that your criticisms are sincerely set forth, I want to try to answer your statement in the hope that I can be patient and use reasonable terms. I think I should indicate why I'm here in Birmingham, since you have been influenced by the view which argues against outsiders coming in. I have the honor of serving as president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, an organization operating in every southern state with headquarters in Atlanta. We have some 85 affiliated organizations throughout the South, and one of them is the Alabama Christian Movement for Human Rights. Several months ago, the affiliate here in Birmingham asked us to be on call to engage in a nonviolent direct action program if such were deemed necessary. So I, along with several members of my staff, am here because I was invited here. I am here because I have organizational ties here. But more basically, I am in Birmingham because injustice is here. Though I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist, as I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Was not the prophet Amos an extremist for justice? Was not Martin Luther an extremist? So the question is not whether we will be extremist, but what kind of extremist will we be? Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? Jesus was an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and therefore rose above his environment. Perhaps the South, the nation, and the world are in dire need of such creative extremists. And the letter goes on. I really encourage you to read it this week. But the point I want to make, is, go back a little bit here. It's already up there. Did you notice the beginning? I put it up there so you could see it. It begins, "My dear fellow clergymen." And then Dr. King addresses their arguments with no degrading comments. In fact, he acknowledges that they are men of goodwill, and he explains a different point of view. Dr. King shows us that when we hold fast to our true identity, we can be impeccable with our word, and we cannot take personally what others say. We understand that they are simply speaking from their worldview. We don't have to agree with it, but we understand that. So Ruiz writes, "We have been conditioned to take things personally, to think that every time something happens, it's about us. The truth is, what other people do or say is not about you. It's about who? Them. It's about them. Even when a situation seems so personal, even when people seem to be launching a personal attack on you, it has nothing to do with you. What they say, what they do, are about their own conditioning, about the agreements in their minds." And Ruiz says, "We take things personally because at some level we agree with what is said or done. Maybe sometimes it's we fear that that's true. But at any rate, this results in our taking in the emotional garbage of another, and guess what? It becomes our emotional garbage. It becomes ours when we take it in." Recently, I was at a regional conference, where we were in a dialogue group. It was a circle group, and each of us were asked to share a problem or a goal that we were having in our churches, and then the group, one by one, would write on little cards what they heard us say, what they noticed about our situation, and any suggestions that they had for us. So when it was all over, I got my cards and I started reading, and you know, people said things like, I forgot to tell you what my goal was. My goal was that First Unity Church would become a mission-centric community where every single person's spiritual gifts would be welcome and accepted, and everybody would feel this engagement. That was my goal. So when I got my cards back, some people said, we see your passion, and you have a sense of community, and we love your intention, and I felt pretty good. Until I got to the last card. And the last card said, "Your problem is you are afraid to lead." I know, whoa is right. Now, I would love to tell you that I took that card and looked at it and said, "I'm not taking this personally." However, that's not exactly what happened. I mean, I admit it, I was taken back with it. It took me a while. It took me quite a while to process it. And then finally, it came to me that this gentleman's idea of leadership and my idea of leadership were not the same, and that's what it was about. And as divine synchronicity would have it, the very next day, he happened to be on a panel discussion where he actually said that he was starting a new leadership role in Unity, and really he felt like he was not good enough to take over the role. Yeah. So his comment to me was not about my leadership, it was about his own personal stuff. It was about his own personal fears, his emotional garbage, and that's always the way it works. And if we could just remember that, we would not take things personally. So let's just say that somebody says you are brilliant or you are an idiot, okay? Does either comment affect your actual IQ by even 1/10 of a point? Obviously not. It's just a judgment. You really don't even know what it means. If I tell you you're brilliant, does that make you feel good? Well, maybe for a minute, but just consider what I might mean. It might mean I admire your intellect, and that would be okay. It might mean I can't understand a thing you're talking about. It might mean, I wish I were as smart as you. No matter what it means, the point is the message is not about you. It's about the other person and his or her perspective and needs. Now, in our human skins, we do tend to take things personally. If somebody cuts us off in traffic or we encounter an accident on the highway, we view it as a personal plot to make us late to work. We can become trapped in what the author calls personal importance. Like two-year-olds, we are egocentric. It's all about me. It's all about me, 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 me. Ruiz says, when we take things personally, we often feel offended. And our reaction to that is to defend ourselves, and therefore we create more conflict. We make something big out of something so little because we have the need to be right and make everyone else wrong. This cartoon says it all. The barista says to the customer, "Have a nice day," and her reaction is, "Don't tell me what to do." Right? There's a story in the book of John that addresses our concern about the actions of others. It takes place on the Sea of Galilee when Jesus appears to his disciples after the resurrection. Now, Jesus is having a heart-to-heart, actually his very last physical heart-to-heart conversation, private conversation with Peter, and he's talking about Peter's future. When Peter looks around and notices that John is following them, well, now John is always named as the disciple that Jesus loved. So Peter is distracted by this, probably a little jealous, and resenting John following him around. And so he says to Jesus, "But Lord, what about this man?" And Jesus says to him and to us, "What is that to you? Follow me." In other words, metaphysically, don't allow yourself to be thrown off your spiritual center by the actions of another. Bible scholar Ed Townley says, this interaction suggests that when we focus our negative energies, they can distort our spiritual purpose. What others do and say is not our concern. Our spiritual purpose is to follow and fully express our own Christ nature. So when we take things personally, we give both our power and our joy away. We let others distract and define us. When we are happy, when people give us compliments, as I was at that conference for a few minutes, and we are devastated when they make negative judgments. Don Miguel Ruiz says, "I don't take it personally when people say, 'Miguel, you are the best.' And I also don't take it personally when people say, 'Miguel, you are the worst.' I know that when you are happy, you will tell me I'm an angel. And when you are unhappy, you will tell me I'm a devil. Either way, it does not affect me because I know who I am. And that's what we have to remember. New Thought minister Michael Beckwith, I think we looked at a different quote of his last week, he said, "We don't need to look to the outside world to convince us we are worthy. If we gain the praise of the entire world but do not have the validation that comes from realizing our innate power and goodness, we have lost our blessing. When we are fully evolved, we will neither be diminished by people's criticism nor elated by their praise." There's a goal for all of us, right? That's a stretch, but it's true. Ruiz says, "You may even say, Miguel, what you're saying is hurting my feelings." But he says, "It is not what I am saying that is hurting you. It is your wounds I have touched by what I have said. You are hurting yourself. There is no way I can take this personally, not because I don't care about you, but because I understand that you see the world through your eyes, and I see the world through mine. We all create stories in our minds all the time. Our brains are really narrative-making devices, and our stories are based on our old agreements. We need to throw out those false stories, especially the story that we are not good enough. When we think we're not good enough, that becomes our truth, and through that perceived truth, we will see the entire world. We will live in this consciousness." To that, Ruiz says, "Even the opinions you have about yourself are not true. Therefore, you don't need to take what you hear in your own mind personally either." We talked about self-talk last week, didn't we? It's not just people out there, it's your own self. "You have a choice. If you feel unworthy and unlovable, if you have the need to be abused, you will see yourself as being abused by others, and sometimes the universe will respond. However, when you know and believe in the absolute depth of your being, that you are God's love and expression, that you are a spiritual being on a spiritual journey, and no person or experience can take your good from you." I'm going to say that again. "No person or experience can take your good from you. When you have this in your consciousness, you will trust yourself and choose to believe or not believe what someone else tells you, and you'll have the discernment and the wisdom to know the difference." So could we just for a few moments this morning imagine what a difference it would make in our lives if we could develop this habit of not taking anything personally? So many painful upsets would be avoided. Anger, jealousy, and envy would disappear when we understand that the things others say are only their opinions, their own agreements, not necessarily the truth. Erez says, "We could travel around the world with our hearts completely open and no one could hurt us. We could say, 'I love you,' without fear of being ridiculed or rejected. We could ask for what we actually need. We could say yes joyfully, or we could say no without self-judgment or guilt. When we follow those first two agreements, being impeccable with your word and taking nothing personally, we can courageously be who we really are, exhibiting compassion for ourselves and others. Our lives would unfold in peace, freedom, and joy, and we could bring those much-needed gifts into the world." And so it is. So let's take a moment now to just affirm the great truth about the divine that makes all of this possible. And this is printed in your bulletin for those of you who are here for the first time. Let's say it together. "There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is."